Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up California, our first official edition of Fired Up Conservative Talk with stories that affect California and, in essence, affects the state. Because in the good old days, how California went is how the nation went. Luckily, that's kind of changed, but what you may not realize is Congress still wants to make it that way. There have been many initiatives that had begun in California that had not made it out of committee when they tried to take it to the federal level. And I am here with my co-host, Tyler Collins, who I'll bring on in a moment to talk about what some of those issues are, as well as how it affects San Diegans and all of Californians. And it's important to understand that what we do locally and at a state level is much, much more important than nationally. You may not be aware, but we get taxed quite a bit on the local level. The Republican Party in California doesn't do much to put money into local elections, and that is a big reason why California has turned blue. Because what I just said applies to Republicans, but Democrats, they understand politics, and it starts from the ground up. And with that, today, we are going to talk about what I call the real Armageddon of the LA fires, the aftermath. Residents battle to reclaim their property and homes. And I want to introduce you to my co-host, Tyler Collins. He will tell you a little bit about himself. But before that, let me tell you about myself before I forget. I have been a political junkie my whole life. That stems from being raised as an American citizen in Panama. I am a Panamanian because of my mother. I have seen my relatives, my family, having to live through two dictators. I've seen the worst of the worst when it comes to things like that. But I was not affected, but it affected my life and how I look at things politically. And I got involved in 2015. I said, enough of this tribalism, this race game. There are many Blacks, Latinos, and Asians who are conservative. So I actually got involved in 2015 and have remained involved since then. I even ran for office and got elected, and I'm proud to say I cleaned up a very corrupt board. What happens is power corrupts, and it corrupts absolutely. We had a board that had had members on there for over a decade, and there were about three or four of them, from a board of 16 who felt they owned, controlled, and they were determined to do as they pleased. And nobody kind of stopped them until I came along. And with that, I will introduce my co-host, Tyler Collins, who probably has a similar tale in terms of how he entered politics, or at least entering politics. Tyler.
Thanks for having me, William. How's it going?
Hanging in there. For the audience, this is technically on take two. Our internet connection was not very good the first time around, and we did the show. We were like, let's go ahead and redo it because we weren't sure how it would look overall. So Tyler, hopefully that dress rehearsal has prepared us. And before we go into our topic of the LA fires and homelessness in San Diego, et cetera, tell us a little bit about yourself or the audience about yourself in terms of why you also got involved and your political career so far.
Yeah, happy to. So I was born and raised in Southern California, and I started getting involved in politics kind of after COVID. I've been living on the East Coast for like 3 years with my now wife. She was going to school out there. I moved back in 2021 to San Diego County. I live in Carlsbad, which is North County, San Diego. And I was really shocked and saddened by what had happened to the state that I loved. It just seemed like every year our freedoms were being eroded and taxes were going up and our quality of life was diminishing. So I wanted to do something. And so actually I, since 2023, have been on the Carlsbad Housing Commission, and I ran for Carlsbad City Council in 2024. Unfortunately, I did not win. It was a nonpartisan race, but the Democrat opponent, they beat me, unfortunately. I did get 42% of the vote, but you need more than 50 in two people to win. So, and now I'm actually a member of the County Republican Party Central Committee. I am an alternate on the Central Committee. So good to be here. Looking forward to talking about LA.
Tyler, what you just said is a great example of you got no help from the Republican Party, I'm guessing, right?
They technically endorsed me as a candidate, but in terms of volunteers or money, No, that was nowhere to be found. So,
which makes an endorsement useless, except for one factor. You do get on the big mail or the big whatever they call it, where they put all the candidates and who to vote for, and that does help. But unless they give you help in the form of volunteers and money to hire volunteers to be able to walk, you're facing an uphill battle against a Democrat machine that is powered by unions. So the Republican Party is a disgrace here in California. Beyond a disgrace, our state chairs have become millionaires or increased their millionaire status through the party, and they've done nothing but act like impotent impotent men, you know, who can't do anything. They're like the ugly, the redheaded stepchild, you know. And I say that with loathe, but they're our party, Tyler, so I still have to keep faith that it can improve. And I don't care what people think, you shouldn't talk about your own party that way. Look, it's realism. I look at my country where I came from and what's happening to California. Well, it starts with California and ends up happening to the state. And what I'm talking about is, happening to the nation. And what I'm referring to is authoritarianism and how bad that can be. All right, sir, let's get to it. Let's talk about our major topic here, and that is the real Armageddon of the LA fires, the aftermath. So in the wake of the catastrophic wildfires that we all know swept through LA, and we also had fires around the same time here in San Diego, but we all know that Pacific Palisades was destroyed, and the recovery and rebuilding efforts, they're the current battleground. It's political, it's social, and it's economically vested in terms of the parties that have an interest in this. And while the bulk of our talk will be regarding the LA fires, we will touch on San Diego and our own issues and understanding this template that the Democrats are going to use to rebuild LA. They are going to use to rebuild the rest of the state if we suffer catastrophic fires of that type. So let's delve into what is a multifaceted aftermath of these fires that we're going to focus on Karen Bass, her decision to name Hagerty Consultant an external firm for the reconstruction process, and that has made Los Angelinos very unhappy. We'll discuss their reaction, the political motivations for hiring Hagerty Consulting, how it touches here in Carlsbad in terms of an analogy of how Democrats look out for Democrats, and then obviously the potential for a conflict of interest. We're also going to talk about Gavin Newsom's approach to climate change and fire prevention. Hint, there is no fire prevention, but there's all climate change. His policies on rebuilding and the broader implications for the community and its identity. Ergo, he wants to bring his Chicago or his Illinois leftism and make it California and turn California into Illinois. But Tyler, in a way, aren't we already that?
Going to say it's hard to make it much worse, right? Well, I don't know. Importing policies and ideas from Chicago is certainly a way to make things worse.
Well, he wants to cement that into L.A. in terms of his belief of wokeism, DEI, and social justice. And then we're also going to explore the significance of homelessness and the role it has in these fire incidents. Spoiler alert, over 50%. The challenges faced by working-class residents who are going to struggle with the rebuild. And obviously, there's a psychological toll with this. And this is going to be a comprehensive discussion. It's a lot to pack. It's going to be about an hour of good old-fashioned talk. And we, of course, want you involved. So don't forget to comment on this podcast. Ask us questions in the comment section. And don't forget to like and share this podcast once we are done. And you can find this podcast and others like it at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Pandora, Spotify under the handle Grumblings Media. So, real quick, Tyler, what are your initial thoughts regarding the fires and the aftermath?
Well, I said this on the last take, and I'm going to say it again. First off, before we go into the politics of it and we make, you know, snark comments about Gavin Newsom this and Gavin Newsom that, I want to take a moment to remember that the people affected by this are real people in Altadena, in these cities that they've just been wiped out. And their homes are gone, and they don't know what to do. They're just living day to day, and I just want to take a moment to think about that. And that any solution or anything that happens here, it's got to be focused on those people and how their lives can be improved. But with that said, we can talk a little bit about the politics of it. So I think we talked about this last time, and I'm going to say it again. These were preventable. This was due to mismanagement at gross levels, gross incompetence. You had a lack of water, and you had a lack of qualified personnel, and a lack of maintenance of the surrounding ecosystems and the brush, which was all led up to this happening. We had a perfect storm with a long period of Santa Ana winds, and it had been almost a year without rains. And this all created a perfect environment for fire, which is exactly what we saw in the Palisades when the whole thing burned down.
Exactly. And to go on the incompetence train or track here, Karen Bass hired Hagerty Consulting, an Illinois-based outside consultant founded by Steve Hagerty and Lisa Altenburn to manage rebuilding. So this decision has been met with public outcry due to the lack of local involvement and transparency. So in other words, people are pissed at, why didn't you hire a Los Angeles firm or at least a California firm instead of aligning yourself with a consulting company that has racial and social justice initiatives as its primary purpose first and rebuilding second, and in rebuilding to rebuild it in the image of how they see social justice. So this was revealed about a month ago now, Tyler, that they would oversee the process and they would do all the damage assessment, they would do all the environmental monitoring, and they would coordinate all federal aid. So you have an outside firm coming in. This is like FEMA Junior, but even worse. Your thoughts on Hagerty Consulting?
Yeah, worse FEMA. That's probably a pretty good description. Like you said, there's a couple of things wrong with this. Where was the local input? Why wasn't a local Los Angeles or even a California firm chosen? And then second of all, they chose a firm, like you said, which is going to prioritize DEI first and real problems of the reconstruction second. So they're putting ideology before the concerns of real people, which is just, unfortunately, here in California, is just another incident that the Democrats repeated, where they're putting party lines and party politics over actually addressing the needs of the people.
And let me give you an idea on this to the audience. So by DEI, what do we mean? Most people are starting to, because the Democrats starting to say, oh, we're talking about blacks. No, we're not talking about black men or women. I'll give you an example. The DEI hire that was number two or three woman at the LA Fire Department, who when asked, well, can you carry a man out there? Her response was, well, if a man put himself in that situation, he was the one who was wrong. You know, it's like, lady, your job is to be able to pick a man up and throw him over your shoulder and walk him out. And you're talking about, well, you can't worry about that because he's the one who got himself into that mess. That's what you call a DEI hire. She's not qualified. She can't do the job, and she's making excuses. As far as Hagerty Consulting, they are known for being first and primary. They're having a focus on social justice, big Black Lives Matter supporters, big supporters to reparations. Steve Hagerty, as the mayor, initiated the nation's first publicly funded reparations program with the cannabis. Now, my issue, Tyler, this is a minor issue, but it's very major amongst us conservative minorities. And as a Latino, I don't look it, but as I've said before, my grandmother was called the N-word. In my household, our skin tone ranges from complete white to complete black and everything in between. And so when I'm kind of getting tired of the left always associating us with cleaning toilets, with picking strawberries. We talked about that during our dress rehearsal, picking strawberries and cannabis and weed. That's always how they sit there and look at us. So what's he do? We're going to use cannabis to help the brothers, you know? It's like, come on, man. And You know, so and their environmental policies are literally, not word for word, I don't want to say, but patterned after the Green New Deal and 100% renewable energy. So they're not looking to do what's best for Los Angelinos, but to implement their religious belief of climate change combined with the social justice and DEI, just to inform the audience. And that's why there's been a public outrage and a frustration, because there's a lack of transparency. They're not talking about this, and this has come out because of research. And this will have impact on property rights, the allocation of federal funds, because DEI believes in allocating federal funds to a certain segment, regardless if that segment needs it most versus another segment. Akin to Western North Carolina, Tyler, when if you had a Trump side, they purposely skipped you. If you were white, you were put to the back of the line in terms of funding. And people don't realize it, but just last week, Trump cleared about 80% of the issues that Joe Biden failed to purposely not resolve. Your final thoughts on this, on Hagerty. And actually, Tyler, tell us, how does it relate to Carlsbad?
Yeah, so two things there. So you're talking about lack of transparency. One thing I was thinking about was the timeline, they said, of when people would be allowed to go back into the area. And could you describe that a bit, William? Because it kept getting pushed back. And this kind of ties into the whole lack of trust between the residents whose houses burned down and the regime who is essentially controlling
this. Right. So what happened there, people, is, and most of you saw this, you know, but what you may not realize is, first, when she was confronted, she lied to President Trump. Karen Bassett said, no, they can get in there right away. And then after some pushback from the audience, whoa, soon, in about a week, then soon. And what she was failing to tell us, Tyler, is that experts in this that work for this L.A. or understand L.A. system were saying, yeah, you're looking at 18 months before you're going to be able to get in there. So not only do you have this Hagerty who's going to distribute money, has all the DEI initiatives, et cetera, et cetera, they're going to take their sweet time in setting all this up while people have to wait before they can get back into their homes.
That's right. That's a tragedy. Now, the second thing you're talking about was the kind of local Carlsbad connection here. And so speaking of corruption and nepotism, we had a very interesting thing that occurred recently in Carlsbad. And now I'm going to be reading something from Steve Petersky's North County Pipeline. It's the article, Questions Surround Local Planning Commissions. And here's a direct quote. Quote, in Carlsbad, Councilwoman Teresa Acosta nominated Spencer Burroughs to the commission, the Planning Commission, and was approved by the council last week. Burroughs is the director of the Political Action Committee for the Carlsbad Democrats Club, which donated $200 to Acosta's campaign in June 2024 and has brought frustration and anger from some residents over this decision. Now, one other thing to note is that Burroughs has no experience in planning. No experience. A lot of these members on this planning commission, they have 10, 20 years experience doing planning-related activities, or they're in commercial real estate. Burroughs has none of that. His only qualifications are that he's on the same political party as Teresa Acosta, and it's going to be a really great way to line up Burroughs for running in the District 1 race in 2026, because now he'll have planning commission experience. Yes. So that's we saw what's happening in L.A., and this happens at your local government level as well in cities like Carlsbad or Oceanside. So it's not just in the big, bad Los Angeles city. It's here, too, local San Diego County.
It's incestuous, Tyler, actually. So, for example, and as you were saying that, I was reviewing my notes and putting some things up, and I came across my notes. It's incestuous. So Hagerty Consulting has deep ties into the Pritzker family. Okay. I got to confess, it just sounded good. Deep ties. I don't know how deep they are. They got ties with this. Deep ties this week on the episode of Pain and Punch. But they do have ties to the Pritzker family. Now, to the audience, to my fellow Californians, are you aware that Gavin Newsom purchased a $9.1 million home in Kent Field, Marin County from Daniel Pritzker, a member of the Pritzker family, just this past November? And Haggerty's also been involved in the Mayor Exchange Program, which is linked to George Soros's Open Society Foundation. So, Tyler, I mean, it goes from the from national level, which we haven't talked about, but the state level, which we just mentioned, to your Carlsbad level. Now, we're not lawyers, but we can both probably assume that there's probably some ways here for the Los Angelinos to sue for a variety of reasons. I don't really want to get into it because neither one of us are lawyers, but I just want to bring that to the attention of the audience. But real quick, what are your thoughts on the, well, they can get in there now. Well, soon. Well, a week from now. Well, reality, it's 18 months. Your thoughts on that?
You already had a lot of distrust between the residents and the city authorities. And when they publicly state things, which are then redacted and corrected, and now, oh, it's more time, and then it's more time, it just erodes further the trust. What can we believe? You told us last week it was 1 month, and now it's 18 months. And it just adds, A, to the sense of distrust, and B, to the sense of uncertainty. The residents really have no idea what the future holds for them. And they don't know if they can believe what's been told to them by authorities about certain payouts or planning processes approvals. They have no idea.
Exactly. And for the audience, it, to quote Karen Bass, quote, it went from, quote, right away, unquote, to, quote, soon, unquote, to, quote, maybe in a week, unquote. And then just to give you the detail here, it was the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers representative who said 18 months, and that is on video. People needed police escorts to get in there, and they had to wait hours just to get in there. Now, Tyler, I have to be honest, there are some hazardous issues. There is some truth to waiting a bit because, for example, say asbestos in some building, that's become airborne now. But my response to that is I don't know if it would take days, hours, weeks, but it's not, or months, et cetera. But I can't see it taking long in some of the communities that don't have that issue. I think giving a blanket statement of 18 months – I think is unfair. There should be, I'm sure there are some communities that can get in there in a few days once the hazmat people go in, and there's going to be other communities you may have to wait. But the wait 18 months to me is disgusting and shows the inefficiency of our current government today. But tell us a little bit about Northridge. I know you're aware of that and the good stuff, oh, not good stuff, but how quickly the community, meaning the people and the government, came together.
Yeah, so like you were saying, William, there's some definite real issues, and it will take some period of time to actually clean this up because there are hazardous materials in these burnout areas. They do need to be cleaned up for health and safety reasons. But I just want to point out an example where you have the government and the private sector actually collaborated successfully for a good outcome. This was in the aftermath of the 1994 Bridge earthquake disaster. So this was a 6.7 magnitude quake, which is said to have been felt as far as Las Vegas and San Diego, which occurred in the San Fernando Valley. This totally wrecked houses, roads, freeway overpasses. If you remember the dramatic pictures from 1994, you could see cars stranded on the freeways with overpasses just completely collapsed, and there'd be one side of a bridge here and another laying on the ground. It was a terrible mess. But the silver lining to this is that the cleanup effort occurred rapidly and very successfully. So here's a quote from a San Fernando Sun article. Just getting to the page here. So contractors rebuilding, this is quote, contractors rebuilding the Gavin Canyon I-5 freeway got a $150,000 financial bonus for each day they finished ahead of schedule and would have been penalized for the same amount each day past the set deadline. They worked 24 hours a day and completed the job in record time. Caltrans, this is the state transit agency, estimated it would take up to 18 months to rebuild. Yet the Santa Monica Pass opened in just 3 months, and all seven of the other collapsed bridges opened 10 months after the earthquake. So that just kind of shows you, one, you have good collaboration and the right incentive structure between the private sector and the government, things can occur quickly and with good outcomes. But I'm not sure that we have, as of right now, I don't think we have the pieces for that to occur in this case.
Correct. And here's an image of so just one building, the damage from the earthquake. As you can see, it was demolished. And while we had a fire, you can see the fire right there. That's the devastation of the fire. All this right here were homes. And with the earthquake, that was how quite a few buildings were. And as you can't equate the damage as being different. The damage on both instances were a 10 out of 10. So for the government to be able to work like that efficiently says something about today's politics and how bad they are. You know, Tyler, what we haven't talked about is 18 months, working class families. What's very sad in our country is most Americans live check to check. Some people may have RVs, they may have friends, but I think we may see some of these individuals become homeless because they don't have friends, especially if they're older and alone. You would think that our tax dollars could help on this, but instead, just last week, Gavin Newsom and the Senate in a special session allocated $50 million to the Illegal Alien Defense Fund. They don't call it illegal alien, but by government proper definition, that's what they're called, illegal aliens. And then he turns right around and goes to the government and specifically meets with President Trump. And this Illegal Alien Defense Fund is an anti-Trump defense fund. That's how they portrayed it. That's how they're attacking it politically, because when you can actually put the hate on an individual, it's easier to generate that hate. And that's what they're trying to do. But on the flip side, he just met with President Trump asking for money. I mean, people are going to be homeless. People have to figure out where they're going to live for 18 months. You're wasting money on people who aren't even constituents of your state. You're not taking care of your state first, and you're asking the federal government to pay. You're asking the federal government, yeah, I'm saving money to try to beat you up, but I need you to help me out with this with more money. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you can't bite the hand that feeds you. Whether the Democrats like it or not, we know they don't like it. Trump has the keys now to all the federal disaster relief. And so it's really interesting that on the one hand, Gavin's trying to negotiate for this state relief from the federal government. And on the other hand, he's directly funding, or working with the legislature, to directly fund anti-Trump, illegal immigrant, $50 million slush fund. That's pretty incredible. And why are we devoting $50 million to people who aren't even citizens of this country when we just had an entire town that burned down? Why aren't we allocating those millions to that rebuilding effort? I mean, I don't know how many houses you'd build if they're each costing $3 million, but it's better than diverting it to people who aren't even citizens of our country.
Right, right. And I want to digress here for a moment here because we don't have the money. And then when you add unions, where a lot of cities and the state has tried to make it where you can only hire unions, people for jobs, where all this clean energy crap. So, for example, you may want to rebuild your home, but they go, no, you can't rebuild your home without solar panels. So they may price you out. So, Tyler, tell us a little bit real quick so people understand the cost of building a home from the government's perspective. I'm not saying this is what it should cost, but how much they're budgeting and wasting our own tax dollars. What I'm trying to say to the audience here is this fire is going to cost in the billions to rebuild LA. And it doesn't necessarily have to cost that much. And I'd like Tyler, tell us a little bit about Carlsbad and the budget increase year in, year out for homes and how much it's costing them. I don't agree with these numbers because I think a lot of it's bloated and could be cut down, but this is what California Democrat politicians have created. Am I wrong or right in my thinking in terms of everything just being bloated and cost?
Yeah, it seems like everything's being bloated. It already costs a lot to build a home in California just because of the cost of labor and materials. It's more expensive here for those reasons than it is in Texas. But you tack onto that all of the permitting processes and approvals processes. Now, this is just in a regular build that we're talking about here. It's going to be even more expensive in Gavin Newsom's Green New Deal dream, you know, climate 2.0 sort of scenario where I think you mentioned this in the last episode, that every home might be mandated to have solar panels installed at owner expense when they reconstruct houses, that it's not just going to be a replacement cost. They're going to bring everything up to the newest code potentially, including all the environmental and efficiency standards. And so this is going to massively increase the cost. And then you talk about union labor. Are we potentially going to have to pay prevailing wage to the people who are rebuilding Pacific Palisades? Because that's going to increase costs. So it really just begs the question of whether the insurance payouts that these people get, I mean, even if they could wait all the time for the rebuilding to occur, will the insurance payout even cover the cost that it's actually going to be charged to them to rebuild these houses?
You know, you're absolutely right. And I'm skipping around a bit. I apologize, Tyler, but that goes to the Coastal Commission. They lifted the regs from the Coastal Commission. Hey, we're going to speed up the building. But then they don't tell you. That means anything goes. And that's when the state can come in. Yeah, you can't rebuild without putting solar panels there. You can't rebuild without making this earthquake proof. And all that's nice. But these people have no place to live. And then the cost. So theoretically, a $3 million home can become a $5 million home in cost to fix. And instead of using our tax, nobody wants to pay taxes, but if we use tax dollars, this is how you want them used to help. You know, it's like, I put into the system, help me out now. But instead they want to help illegal aliens because they hate Trump. And the illegal alien is tomorrow's future Democrat vote. So they say, screw you, Mr. Constituent. That's who we're going to take care of. And I just think that's wrong. And that's how they look at it, people. I'm cutting to the chase here. You're looking at a kid who saw two dictators mistreat his family, mistreat his Panamanian brethren out there. And that's what I'm seeing here. You know, it's where you would disappear in Noriega's government. Here, they just tax you to death and then keep funds from you and make you homeless. And I'm not being sarcastic. I may be making it sound a little worse than what it is for most. But what I said will happen to certain people, you know, and Gavin Newsom will come back to it with, no, we cut the budget a little bit for the climate change. They did. In their defense, they cut the climate change budget slightly. I want to say by about $3 billion. But we are still the number one or in the tops in the country in how much we put out to climate change in the building and the money our taxes go to. And to make it even worse, that's in the nation. Globally, we're one of the tops around the world as well. So it's just a complete nightmare scenario we're looking at here. Your thoughts on the climate change, how much we put into it, the Gavin Newsom's impact of looking more at climate change than the deforestation. He has not addressed the deforestation yet. He has not addressed water. He said things about water, but no actions. And in fact, Tyler, Trump said, screw you, and said, open the dams, let the water flow. And they did. And what happened? The state and local authorities, and then what they do, they start complaining, oh, it's too much water. It's like they were trying to say, it's like turning a spigot on it. You know, but they had ample time to prepare for it. So excuse my French here, people. I'm not going to curse. I promised my producer I wouldn't curse. It's a cluster bleep here. Your thoughts. I threw a lot at you, Tyler. So let me break it down for you. First, your thoughts on Newsom's budget and his climate change over deforestation.
Well, that just goes back to their whole agenda. And the way that the Democrats are trying to spin this is that the Pacific Palisades fire were caused by climate, so now we need to spend your tax dollars to address climate. But were the Pacific Palisades fires and all these fires that we're seeing in Bonneville and Chula Vista, were these caused by climate? Or was it perhaps the more reasonable and common sense explanation that you didn't thin the forests and you didn't have the water, the hydrants didn't have any water, so you couldn't put out the fires in the first place? And California is a desert. We live in a desert. It's not meant, I mean, unless you have advanced technology like we have and you have aqueducts that go from the Colorado River and go from Northern California, this whole area isn't meant to naturally host more than a few million people. We've grossly exceeded the natural carrying capacity of the land, and the only way to maintain that is through advanced technology. And you have to have controlled burns, you have to have thinning of the forests, because naturally, you can look back in California history, there are cycles of dryness and wetness, and the early explorers, you talked about the Spanish explorers, they reported every fall, it was very smoky in Norte California. You know, you had California Sur, the Baja California, and Norte California. And even the Native Americans, they would do controlled burns of the forest because they knew that this was the burning and the rebirth of the forest. This is part of the natural cycle. And when the government stopped doing that, they said because of the environment, we had the whole hippies movement of the 60s and environmentalism. They basically said, well, now it's actually unethical to thin the forest. We need to preserve it. And so you had all this overgrowth and essentially kindling, which is built up in the natural environment over decades. And now we're reaping the rewards of that. And that's uncontrolled fires.
Correct. Correct. In fact, before I ask you about the water situation, Rick Caruso a few years ago said, yeah, there was a fire in Brentwood. And then he goes, I realize, oh my God, boy, this catches here. He just saw literally miles of debris and deforestation that had not happened. He's like, this is going to blow up. This is going to head on down, you know. Sure enough, that's kind of what happened, you know. So President Trump acted, and they couldn't even appreciate him and blame him on too much water, man. It's too much water. Yeah. Thoughts on the fact that our reservoirs are still empty. You know, you would think
yes, exactly. And why weren't we filling up these reservoirs? I guess because we had to save the red-legged frog or something. Don't get me wrong, I love nature, but if it comes between saving the red-legged frog and saving Pacific Palisades by storing more water when we need to use it, I'm going to save Pacific Palisades, and I'm going to save human civilization at the cost of, you know, maybe we're threatening some more species. Unfortunately, that is the reality, but we have to prioritize the needs of humanity.
Right, right. And, you know, Brian Jones called out the illegal defense fund. Well, not the illegal defense fund, but the unethical defense fund for the illegal aliens. And I'm sure Carl DeMaio has probably said words and a few others. But I think it's still a super majority, meaning Democrats can pass whatever they want at their leisure. So until you, Los Angelinos, realize what you voted for has come back to bite you and us in the tail, because even though I voted for somebody else, at the end, we're a state. Hey, so we ended up voting for this democracy that's more authoritarian, and we're paying the price. Y'all need to understand, you need to vote not necessarily Republican, but for conservative candidates. And more importantly, stop fighting the cleaning of the roles. You know, so let's move on to rebuilding restrictions. You know, obviously everything's got to be climate change proof and their pseudoscience with the rebuilding, you know, so that's going to add again to more costs. But I want to look at it from the affordable housing. They're going to have, I'm just being common sense. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know these rules in depth, but they're demanding affordable housing now be put into Palisades and other areas that did not have it. Because these were established communities from the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s that kind of just kept growing. However, to get affordable housing, they're going to have to take somebody's land. So not only are they going to sit there and demand you build it a certain way, they're going to sit there and take certain people's lands. And Tyler, I think you mentioned before about how they do that. You know, if somebody can't afford it, they sell and move on. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I've heard this too, that they're potentially going to be imposing these low-income housing, minimum housing standards on the rebuilding of Pacific Palisades. And like you said, these were communities that existed before all this low-income housing legislation passed. Just for a little context, I'm on the Housing Commission of Carlsbad. And so I face, you know, every month we talk about homelessness policy, affordable housing policy. Statewide, there's a 10% minimum affordable housing amount, which must be built. So if you build 10 houses, one of those must be, at least one of those, must be allocated towards affordable housing. And oftentimes this is low income or very low income. And so what I'm hearing is that they're going to be applying those same standards, the rebuilding of Pacific Palisades. So let's say you had 10,000 homes that you're going to be rebuilding. 1,000 of those are now going to be low income. And essentially, for that to happen, the government's going to need to seize land from private individuals. They're going to need to invoke eminent domain. And if those people don't want to sell, because, you know, I've owned this house with my wife and whatever since 1970, the government's going to say, too bad. And they're going to, what would you say? They're going to execute a condemnation action to then condemn the land, and they're going to seize it by force. Of course, they have to pay a fair market value for the land, whatever that means for some burnt down house. I mean, exactly. You have a whole bunch of history of eminent domain not paying out, you know, the government not paying out fair values under eminent domain. So that's what's going to happen as part of this. We got the Green New Deal, which is Newsom and them are going to be applying all these new regulations to the rebuilding. And now we also have the low-income housing piece. And so this is just hamstringing the rebuilding efforts of Pacific Palisades even more.
And to the audience out there, it's not that we don't believe in low-income housing. We want everybody to have a home. But we have a housing shortage brought on by CEQA, in essence, climate-style regulations that has curtailed home building. And more importantly, you're going to take land from people who bought and paid for it already. They may not want to move. Well, William, they're getting $2.5 million for that plot of land. Well, they may want to live here. California is a beautiful community. It's a beautiful place. People want to come out here. It's what's it called? You probably don't remember, but when I was a kid, it was California Dreaming. That's how the nation looked at California, California Dreaming, because of the beauty. Now, granted, everybody thought California was Baywatch, in a way it isn't, but you can't beat the weather. You can't beat the environment. So, yes, this is part of the reshaping that Hagerty Consulting is going to thrust upon the people. When I say thrust, Los Angelinos are going to bend your ass over. that's going to happen. So, uninsured people, Tyler, are being taken care of for the short term from FEMA. Don't you think that it's a costly lesson? But I would be for a law. I want smaller government. I know you do. Tyler's a Republican, but he has libertarian leanings there in certain aspects. We all want less government. But if there's a certain law, I'm like, I'm okay because of experience of dealing with, well, what happens? It's kind of like a parent to their child. We're making you do this for your own good. If you're forced to have insurance, then we don't have to worry about if a fire comes and you become homeless and then you become a byproduct of the state having to take care of you. So, but that's not the case now. Some people don't have homes. So my take is create a law, make it mandatory for if you own a home, you have to have insurance because you don't have to have insurance if your home is paid for. People don't realize that. The safest people in this fire were those who didn't own their homes because they were forced to buy insurance. So let's get that out of the way. That's my take in moving forward. But I'm like, I don't want to pay taxes, but let's help these people get back into their homes, maybe add a penalty who did not have insurance before putting them on the street. If they don't want to sell the land. Maybe, I don't know, Tyler, maybe a punishment is, hey, you can't build it, you're forced to sell it. That's on you because you chose not to get insurance. I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so you bring up interesting points there. So if you paid off your home, you don't have to have insurance. I have libertarian leanings. I don't like mandates for a lot of things. I'd prefer educating people. Basically, I can't think of a scenario where you wouldn't want fire insurance. I'm a real estate agent. I have my license and I own a home. You want fire insurance, people. Don't skimp on that. I mean, of course, the question is if you can find it in California, and that's a whole other discussion because the insurance agencies have been leaving the state. But Yeah, if you didn't have fire insurance and your home burned down, that's tragic. And maybe there should be some kind of penalties for that. If the government's going to give you assistance, then maybe you need to have some kind of penalties when this is covered for you, because someone's bad decision shouldn't be a cost to the taxpayer. If you made a bad decision with full knowledge and agency, then that shouldn't be borne by other people. That's kind of the libertarian principle of individual responsibility.
Exactly. So we're not going to get into it, but I want to, because we did mention this at the start of the show, there are mental issues with this. The stress of having to wait 18 months, the stress of can I rebuild, the stress of where will I live, the stress of I had no job, my business burnt down, or where I worked at burnt down. So there are a lot of mental issues as well. Am I saying everybody needs to have a free therapist? No. But what I'm saying is Los Angelinos are going to go through a rough time. The rough times are just beginning. FEMA will not be able to help long term. California will not be able to help long term. I pray there's enough charities out there that can help out, because Tyler, one thing people don't realize, beginning in the 60s, the government made a purposely concerted effort to take charities out at the knees, because they wanted a government program for not everything, but much of what charity was doing. They're like, we can do it better. And they've proven to be inept at that. And we are suffering those unintended consequences today. Your quick thoughts on the mental aspect, and then I want to move on to what I think is a bigger subject we'll do the final 10-15 minutes on, and that's homelessness. But your thoughts on the mental issue?
Yeah, it'd be incredibly traumatic, not just for the adults who had to deal with, you know, the financial aspects and where you're going to stay, the logistical, but also the kids. Imagine if you were 5 years old and your house burned down and mommy and daddy say you need to stay in a hotel now, and you don't know what your future is, and everything you loved is gone. So you're going to have a whole generation of those kids who now are scarred by this for life. It's really sad. And like we talked about before, there's all this distrust of local government. And, you know, there's very little for people to cling on to in terms of something solid of like, okay, I'm going to be back in a new house in 3 years from now. They have no certainty on really anything. They don't know when they're going to be allowed back into the area to start construction, and they don't know what construction regulations they're going to be and how expensive everything's going to be. And they don't know. And then another one, which, I mean, you wouldn't have even thought about this necessarily yet, but let's say you even rebuilt your house. Can you get insurance, fire insurance for your house after you rebuild it?
Oh, that's right.
I don't know.
That's right. That's right. You know, I was thinking of bad comedy. Danny, where's Rex at? Well, we're eating steak tonight, baby girl. I'm sorry. That's a sailor mind, baby. That's a guy mind, baby. Yo, Daddy, where's Rex? I want to give him a little bit of my beef I got there. Don't worry about that, honey. All right. Now then, got that bad joke out of there. Let's look at some – I mentioned the term already, unintended consequences. Or you can sit there and say ignoring the obvious, Tyler. The homelessness and their art for arson. Okay, so fire start among the homeless due to survival needs. They want to stay warm at night. We're a desert, so it gets chilly at night. Cook. They want to eat. They want to make sure Rex is cooked through and through. You know, they want light in the evening. You know, other reasons for starting fires. They're just mentally messed up in the head. They don't want. A lot of them just have refused to take their meds. Others suffer from substance abuse issues, whether alcoholics or drug addicts. And then you also look at the absence of proper disposal facilities, everything from TP to boxes they live in to stuff that they pick up and discard. All of this contributes to fires. Before I get into the data, if I say this to an audience of people here at a party, what do you think? I have no idea, but what do you think the reaction is going to be, Tyler? If I said to say the homeless dude, this is part of the reason. I would imagine 2/3 of that wanting to put themselves on their soapbox and sound almighty and pious would go, no, William, you're wrong. They're good people. Am I wrong to think that that's what the average Californian, how they would see it?
I think there's a lot of people, like you said, 2/3, they're not going to want to admit that outright. They're gonna virtue signal and say, oh, no, they're just suffering. We can't blame them for the fires.
And here's how you respond, people. In 2023, LA saw 13,900 fires linked to the homeless, doubling from 2020. Now, during our dress rehearsal, Tad was like, 13,000, is that true? Yeah. But you got to remember, a lot of these fires get put out naturally, not naturally, but, you know, it doesn't take the whole fire department to come out. It's what the criteria is. But 13,900, that's no joke. You know, that's doubled from 2020. And over the last few years, 50% of LAFD's fire responses were associated with homeless encampments, with arson accounting for a third of these incidents. Recent incidents, the Kenneth Fire in Woodland Hills involved a homeless man detained for using a blowtorch, and yet they did not charge him. Amy Riker, who you know and I know, she was reporting on the homeless encampments maybe 2-3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago at this point, and a fire started while she was reporting on that. Before I get your inputs, let me tell you about San Diego real quick, because San Diego's our neck in the woods, people. We may be talking about L.A., but in this case, I always like to say how California goes, the nation goes. Well, how L.A. is going to go is how Democrats want the rest of the state to go. So this affects us. But to throw some data out there regarding San Diego, over 900 fires, Tyler, in 2024 were linked to to homelessness, and that's per ABC 10 News. We had three fires recently, Friars Fire, Center Fire, the Gilman Fire, and that was confirmed by Mass that were caused by homeless encampments. And, you know, people always say, well, arrest them, throw them in jail. Well, that still does nothing for all the destroyed property, possible deaths. You know, it's even if they do make arrests, and they did make an arrest once here recently to a homeless individual for igniting 9 wildfires. And they try to appease us by saying, yeah, he's looking at a long-term imprisonment. What good does that do? I mean, yeah, imprison him, but it doesn't solve the issue. Your thoughts on the data here?
Like you said, I was completely shocked. The first time you told me those stats, my mouth dropped. I just couldn't believe it. You had 50% of the entire LA Fire Department's yearly calls for fires were from homeless individuals starting them fires. So that just I knew it was a problem. I knew that the homeless encampments, you know, they had fires and bins to warm up, but I didn't know the scale of the problem. It really blew me away. And so we can't, like you said, even if we do prosecute these people, there's still homeless encampments that are starting fires. You can't solve a problem by just treating the symptoms after it's happened. Oh, well, we found the person who started it. Well, what about all the ones in the future? What about all those?
Yeah, and you know, Tyler, in 2024, California saw 109 arson arrests for wildfires. This is a widespread problem. Now, that's what they were able to find. That's just the tip of the iceberg in what is likely much arson out there in creating wildfire. You know, so the homelessness crisis and the fire conundrum is what we're facing in California, and homelessness is a growing problem. California has seen a 42% increase in homeless population since 2014. So since 2014, to the audience, out of 10 homeless people, when they decide, where do I want to be homeless at, Tyler? 4 out of 10 pick California. There are 50 states and 4 out of 10. We are the leading state for the homeless population. And yet, Tyler, we've spent $24 billion over the last 5 years. That there's no nonprofit accountability or NGOs, non-government organizations who take money. A lot of these nonprofits, they're not helping people because they want to help. They're helping because they're earning 6 figures, the executive directors, the presidents, etc. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's horrible. They keep spending more money and the problem keeps getting worse. We can see this all the way down to the local level. Do you want to pull up a chart about Carlsbad?
Sure. We'll use Carlsbad here as a great example. Where are you at, Carlsbad? There you go.
On the Housing Commission. Yep, I can see it just fine. So I'm on the Housing Commission, and we had a session a while ago where they showed us the Department of Housing and Homelessness Services for the city showed us this chart, and it was essentially their projected budget for 25 to 26. And you can see line goes up here in a big way. This is a post by Amy Reichert, and she has the chart here. This is an official chart from the city, though, that she's showing. The city of Carlsbad just approved a $9 million homelessness budget for 112 confirmed homeless. Can you scroll up so I can read the rest?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're reading her notes.
Yeah. $80,000 per person per year. That's over $6,000 per month per homeless in non-shelter spending, with just 8% for shelter and 92% for staff, benefits, and outreach. So you can see in financial year 24 to 25, we were at about $6 million here, and now it's $9 million. So it's gone up roughly 50%. And what results are we getting? We still have homeless. We still have encampments. I don't know where all the money is going. Where are the results? It just seems to be the bureaucracy expands for the sake of the expanding bureaucracy.
Well, I can tell you this, Tyler. I work for two nonprofits, and I did a lot of research in this when the American Cross scandal broke out. 60% of all costs, and I would imagine, I'm not speculating, just making a logical deduction here, that it's the same thing for these NGOs. 60% of the money goes into non-administrative, ergo salaries, you know, office space, the company car. Yes, these people have things like that, you know, funding their trips to go. We got to fight environmentalism in Sweden, woohoo, in Hawaii, woohoo, in Tahiti, woohoo. That's where all this money goes to. I don't want to say little, but less than 40% more than likely goes to actually helping the situation. It's an ugly situation, and it's one that because of what Trump is doing, unrelated with his USAID auditing the government, in essence, who's arguing the most, fighting it the most? The people who are benefiting the most, and that right now are Democrats. And there are rhinos there too, don't get me wrong, but Democrats have mastered this. SoCal is Democrat-built right now, Democrat-owned. That's a Democrat template you're looking at with that chart. And it's terrible. It's terrible. But because of what Trump is doing, auditing the government, you're going to start seeing people locally, at least if we're smart here on our side, to start demanding similar audits. And they will happen. So eventually, some people will run.
You had a really interesting thing actually happen when I ran for city council in 2024.
What's that?
So I had some meetings with the head of the city's finance department, because I was informed that there was a structural deficit for the city that they were approaching within 2 years, that they were going to be in a structural deficit. And so I sat down for a 2-hour meeting with the head of the city's finance department. We went over all this, talked about their CalPERS obligations and certain growing like trip and fall hazard funds. Essentially, the lines cross where you have the lines cross where expenditures exceed revenue at a certain point. That was projected like 2 years out. And now somehow I think word about me.
I don't mean to interrupt. To the audience, a great point here to make on indoctrination. He said where expenditures exceed revenue. No, it's when the expenditures exceed the taxes they're collecting on us. I apologize, but that really irks me because we use revenue. Revenue is what a company brings in from selling their products or services. They purposely change that, Democrats, to go from taxes to revenue so you don't think, hey, that's my money. Oh, no, that's revenue to do this. I apologize for interrupting, but remember that it's not revenue, people. It's our tax dollars. Go ahead.
So expenditures exceeded tax dollars. It was projected 2 years out. And so I had this meeting, and I think somehow word got around the grapevine. And lo and behold, when I had a city council debate with all me and then the Democrat incumbents there, all of a sudden, the structural deficit that the city was facing, they had some city council session, and they waved a magic wand and moved some money here and moved some money there. And, well, now we no longer have a structural deficit, because they changed some numbers and they lowered some amounts. So on paper, the city was doing just fine.
Exactly.
So that in the debate, I couldn't say that the city was facing a structural deficit because of their incompetence and mismanagement.
Well, right, right. It's cooking the books, and that's why you need an audit. That's exactly what it is. And see, they can do that. That's why, again, at the national level, USAID has been able to get away with everything because they cook the books. They hide where it's going. But eventually, you got to pay the piper. But you can keep punting it down, but eventually it will reach a breaking point. Now, sadly, you can keep punting it down for generations. But we're at a point now that it's getting to we're going to have to pay the piper. And Tyler, what your story there is common in terms of the truth not being able to get out of there. You know, they tried to fix this many ways, and they want to try new things. I don't want to digress away from our fire and homeless topic. But at the end of the day, none of what the state has tried has worked, whether it's increased shelter and housing, enhanced fire safety education, mental health and substance abuse services.
Homeless or housing first. Don't even get started on that.
Housing first. All of this has failed for a variety of reasons. At the end of the day, many homeless want to remain homeless. And until you're able to change that mental mindset, nothing will work until you get them to understand you need to take your medication. You need to get clean. You can't, et cetera, et cetera. So we're at a point where I don't want to say we're at a what do they call it, stall. We're stalled in a way. We're going to have to figure out how to overcome that. Tyler, any final words from you before I close the show out in regards to Hagerty Consulting, to the rebuilding aftermath, to 18 months, to Gavin Newsom and climate first, deforestation and water second? What are your thoughts before we close it out? Your final comments to the people.
Final comments. I wanted to end on something positive. So if we want to see a good outcome from the rebuilding of Pacific Palisades, I think the people of Pacific Palisades and Altadena, these other affected areas, they need to hold their local leaders accountable. And the best way to do that is in 2026 when you elect someone. So you don't think about blue or red. Think about who is going to have the best interest of your community in mind. Who is going to put the problems of real people over ideology and political projects. And Karen Bass seems like she's putting political interests and corrupt interests ahead of her constituents. So let's look, you know, real hard, city councils, all these sort of elections. Try and fix the problem there, because then hopefully we'll have someone who actually responds to your concerns.
Exactly. So in essence, the Los Angeles fires revealed not only the fragility of our urban environments in the face of natural disasters, but also the intricate web of political, economic, and social issues that dictate our paths to recovery. From the selection of Hagerty Consulting by Mayor Bass to the broader policies of a bad governor in Governor Newsom, the response to these fires has been as much about governance, well, bad governance, ideology, bad ideology, and identity as in social justice, as it is about the upcoming physical reconstruction and the ongoing challenges with the homelessness. Wow. The economic disparity affecting the working class residents who are out for 18 months, who some will join the homeless community, and the psychological impacts underscore the need for a more holistic, transparent, and community-focused approach to disaster recovery. Ergo, we need common sense more than DEI and social justice initiatives in the rebuild. As California continues to navigate these turbulent waters, the lessons learned here, well, they're going to shape future responses to similar crises. And let's pray and hope that does not come to San Diego. So the importance of balancing immediate recovery needs with long-term community resilience and savvy equity. I hate that term, but what I mean by that term is treating everybody equal in terms of the rebuild and restoration process is incredibly important, because the rich can wait it out. The working class and the poor cannot. So the journey from the ashes of these fires to a rebuilt LA is going to be fraught with much, much negative issues that come from a mayor and a consultant who look at it from their ideological perspectives and not the needs of the community. But if all voices are heard, and if you forcefully voice your concerns, the true needs of the community will be addressed. I want to thank everybody for listening to our inaugural episode of Fired Up California. You can find this podcast at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as our social media outlets, YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, y Pandora. I am William Del Pilar for Tyler Collins, and this is Fired Up California. Until next week, we bid you adieu.